Track 12. We have two feature items for you this week. The first is from TNF Soundings and is all about people of determination. Is people of determination the perfect description for people with a disability, including visual impairment, to mark their successes in life? That's certainly the case based on this article, written by Fiona and read by Tanya, and, well, I'll introduce the second item later.
TNF Soundings. Features from across the UK.
Hello, this is Tanya with an article written by Fiona entitled People of Determination All Over the World. The United Arab Emirates refers to people with disabilities as people of determination, in recognition of their achievements in different fields. As such, people of determination are protected and empowered through services and facilities in the areas of education, health, jobs, and more. In Abu Dhabi, the Zayed Hire Organization has produced the first comprehensive, interactive and recreational bag for children with visual impairments. Created during workshops and vocational training sessions, each kit is packed with educational and recreational activities designed to develop skills, enhance sensory experiences and foster community connections. People of determination seems such a perfect description for people with a disability, including visual impairment, to mark their successes in life. So, let's take a whistle-stop tour around the world and find out what assistance people of determination everywhere are receiving to help them achieve their goals. First, let's meet 70-year-old Vijay Walia, whose relentless efforts over 2 years bore fruit in July this year, when the Punjab government announced the implementation of a facility to benefit the blind. That benefit is free travel for attendants accompanying them on government buses. Walia himself is 100% blind, but his disability has not deterred him from fighting for the rights of labourers and the underprivileged. He took up the cause of construction workers when the Punjab government failed to implement a scheme agreed in 2021 that would allow free travel for one person accompanying a blind passenger on government buses. Walia, a true person of determination, took up the cause in 2022 and now, after 2 years of lobbying, has been successful. Speaking to the Indian Express, Walia said, "The implementation of such provisions is the least the government should do for the disabled who face many challenges in life." Next on our whistle-stop tour is the USA, where inmates at three different prisons in Indiana are training assistance dogs. The Indiana Canine Assistant Network, ICANN, aims to not only train dogs but to transform the lives of inmates and disabled people in the state by allowing incarcerated individuals to work alongside their furry companions. ICANN helps them move beyond their past mistakes and find hope for the future. The scheme is helping offenders to become productive and responsible citizens. Prison inmates nurture and train the dogs from puppyhood, alternating the dogs between prison and society to provide them with a variety of experiences en route to becoming fully fledged guide, hearing and service dogs. Moreover, ICANN boasts a relapse rate among participating inmates of just 14.5% compared to the state's average of 33.82%. So, the program not only transforms the lives of inmates but also has a ripple effect, benefiting the community as well as providing assistance dogs to those who need them. Even better news is that similar programs are in place at prisons at Shelton Abbey in Ireland and in South Queensland Correctional Centre in Australia. Here in the UK, of course, we are lucky that so many organisations, charities, unofficial groups and individuals strive to help our own people of determination. A group of Morris dancers in Malvern, Worcestershire is just one example. All members of the troupe are visually impaired and they perform to raise money for the Guide Dogs for the Blind charity. Originally, the group was formed purely to raise money for charity, but things spiralled when they met sighted musician Anne Dix and her Labrador Sasha. A regular exercise class became a dance class when the retired classics teacher agreed to play for the dancers, first on her saxophone, and then with an accordion-style melodeon. Soon the troupe branded themselves so excited and made a debut performance in a local pub. Membership grew from 8 dancers to over 20 people of determination, plus 4 guide dogs. Dancers perform wearing high-vis strips of colourful fabric to ensure members are visible to each other. They often come up with choreography to suit the spatial abilities of their dancers. They've performed at folk festivals, care homes and children's fairs each time, raising funds for guide dogs, as well as local charities. To date, they have raised more than £10,000.
DNF Soundings.
Secondly, we have an article that appeared in last week's Advertiser, which makes me shiver to read it. So I'll let Charmaine tell you about Swimming with the Fishes, and this was written by Alice Henderson.
In a bid to improve my connection with nature, as well as to soothe my sometimes fried nervous system, this summer I decided to immerse myself in regular cold water experiences. Whilst I have loved swimming in the sea over the years and always try to get in there a few times during the warmer summer months, life often seems to get in the way. I cannot claim to have committed to swimming, I actually mean dipping, as there is often not much swimming to be seen every day, but I certainly have been in the sea more this year than ever before. Every experience has been different, and I have met a whole range of people and wildlife along the way. One sunny June day, when squeezing into the street gate car park was a bit of a challenge, I met some friends to take my first dip of the season. I knew it was going to be cold. It always is the first time. So you may imagine my surprise when I found myself surrounded by lots and lots of jellyfish. Jellyfish are usually known for favouring warmer waters that come later in the season. Now, unlike most people who retreat from jellyfish as fast as they are able, I have always been intrigued by them and wanted to have a closer look. These little creatures were compass jellyfish, not the large ones that I was used to seeing later in the summer, but tiny ones the size of golf balls, but with the longest tentacles. It was difficult to avoid being caught by them, but luckily the little fellas were not particularly potent, and by the time I retreated from the water, I could no longer feel that I had been stung. Hanging out with a jellyfish was an array of comb jellies, creatures that could be confused with jellyfish, but are actually a different creature entirely. These translucent marine invertebrates look a little bit like a gooseberry or a gherkin and are lined with rows of tiny hairs that move in a way that produces an iridescent, shimmering effect. On a low tide at Torcross, it is possible to snorkel round the rocks and glimpse a variety of fish hanging out in and about the seaweed that clings to the seabed. I have taken to stopping here on my way home from work. One pristinely still day in August, I saw that the water was clear, so I decided to spend some time swimming with the fishes, observing them and enjoying being momentarily in their world. Thousands of sand eels shimmered in the sunlight, their slim little bodies wiggling back and forth as they swam together in unison, with the occasional larger sand eel meandering through the shoal. A solitary grey mullet appeared out of the gloom and took me by surprise, but I guess I surprised it too, as it soon darted off. Then a sight that I had not observed before. A group of small, unidentified fish were making a meal out of what I can only presume was a dead jellyfish. A few at a time, they darted back to the floating jelly, taking a bite and then darting away. I looked on mesmerized. Another favourite swimming spot, although not for everyone, is at Bowcombe Quay, that's near Kingsbridge. Here at high tide, I throw myself off the edge of the quay and sometimes the bridge into the estuary, where marginally warmer water than the sea awaits. If the tide is not high enough, I wade out with the squidgy mud between my toes. At these times, with the tide just covering the mud flats, the water is often alive with grey mullet that skim along with their noses out of the water, feeding on surface oils, which are mainly composed of microalgae, that are lifted off the mud by the incoming and on outgoing tides. I enjoy watching them swirl around and make patterns in the water as they scoot about without a care. One day, while sitting on the edge of the quay, waiting for the tide to come in, I watched as thousands of tiny fish fry swam past. These tiny, almost microscopic larvae are so tiny you could almost miss them. One day, a fraction of their numbers will grow to become some of the many adult fish species we see in the estuary and sea. But for the rest, they provide food for all sorts of creature living in and around the water. I intend to keep swimming through the winter, so I update you with more watery adventures later in the year.